What's going on, everyone? I'm Zach, your host of the Augsoro Podcast, and welcome to another episode of Augsoro Chat. I hope everyone is having a great week. I hope everyone is able to get out there, do something fun, do something exciting. I'm trying to work more into my schedule is going outside and spending moments outside. I think that's something, it's like a low effort thing you can do to make yourself feel better. Walking around outside, getting some sunlight, especially over the winter when it's so rare to have those moments outside. You kind of fall into that seasonal depression. Things, you might not be getting as much vitamin D. You might be trapped inside an office all day. You may not even see the sun before you walk into the office, and then you leave without having gotten any sunlight for the entire day. And then you walk outside at 5 o'clock and it's already starting to get dark. So there are a lot of people that barely see the sunlight. And so I'm trying to get outside for at least 20 to 30 minutes during the day, walk around, even if it's not super sunny. Just, you know, being outside just helps anyway. It helps me think about things more clearly. Sometimes I just walk around with no music or no podcast and just think about stuff. Maybe something comes to mind and I write something down. But a lot of times I'm just trying to refocus my energy for the second half of the day, or just kind of realign a little bit. I think if anyone spends enough time inside, they start to go crazy. And if I feel myself getting anxious, those thoughts start to build up, and I try to force myself to just move around, do something, walk outside, get some sunlight, and just enjoy the city. Because I work in Brooklyn. It's a beautiful area to walk around. I don't think enough people appreciate the area that's in their immediate surroundings. Whatever it is, you can just go outside and be a part of it. You don't necessarily have to have any goal in mind. Just go walk around outside aimlessly for 20, 30 minutes. You don't have to have any idea where you're going. Just have the spot in mind where you want to go back to, and then just walk around. And then when the time is up, when you have to get back into the office, when you have to do whatever you have to do next, just go back. You don't necessarily have to have a plan. So, I mean, I'm thinking about that right now as I'm looking out my window. I can see the Statue of Liberty. I can see the New York City skyline to my right, and I'll be outside soon enough. I'm actually going rock climbing later today at this place called Central Rock in New York City. So I'm going to have a nice walk to the subway, get on the rocks, just do something active and walk around outside, maybe meet a friend for lunch or dinner later, just grab a drink. But yeah, just looking outside right now just makes me think about how important it is to just be outside and kind of absorb the sunlight and the environment, so you're not driving yourself fucking crazy in the middle of the day. Yeah, so the first thing that I wanted to talk about is Robert Downey Jr. on the Joe Rogan podcast. Coffee sip. So for those of you who are not aware, or maybe you don't listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, Robert Downey Jr. appeared on Joe Rogan this past week, and I thought it was an amazing conversation. It was short. It was shorter than the typical Joe Rogan podcast, but I still think it was a great conversation, a lot of insight from Robert Downey Jr., someone who doesn't really do that many long form interviews. So it was cool to hear him sit down and talk about some of the things that he thinks about when he acts, or some of the earlier points in his life when, you know, he wasn't so quote unquote successful. He was still in the movie business, but he wasn't extremely well known, and kind of his approach to doing things right now, because he's getting out of the 12-year journey that he had on Iron Man. And just seeing these conversations in general, especially on Joe Rogan, it has a great way of humanizing what people go through. There's like this process of humanization that every guest goes through on Joe Rogan, where if you're going to sit down for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, I think Alex Jones one time was on Joe Rogan for 5 fucking hours. And eventually you can't just be charming and say whatever your publicist wants you to say. Eventually you're going to run out of that, you know, the bullshit facade answers that a lot of people in the entertainment industry are trained to do. For these 15 minute or less interviews, you're armed with all these deflections, and you become really good at just talking, not really getting into details, but giving these answers that make it seem like you're going in depth, but you're not actually saying anything. And so maybe there was a little bit of that at the start, but I think Joe Rogan does a great job of disarming Robert Downey Jr. And they ended up having this really fucking cool conversation for, I think it was about an hour and 15 minutes. One of the quotes that really stuck out to me, there were a few. One of the quotes that really stuck out to me was a quote from Robert Downey Jr. And he was talking about what his mindset is when he walks onto set, when he walks onto a movie set, and he has his plan in front of him for the day and kind of how he wants to go about things. So Robert Downey Jr. says, quote, "Always know what your action is, because then when you come in the morning confident, or when you come in the morning and you can't hit your ass with both hands, you know what to do. Boil down what it is that you're doing." Wow. Yeah, that's something that can apply to whatever you're trying to do, not just acting, but whatever you're doing in general, whether you're working in finance or you're podcasting, you're a writer, knowing what your action is and kind of separating that action from your emotion and detaching from it and saying, no matter what I feel like that day, whether I'm confident or I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, I can't hit my ass with both hands, how Robert Downey puts it, which is a great visualization. You have to be really discombobulated to not be able to slap yourself in the ass with both hands. That's kind of kinky too. So maybe that would be a good idea if you aren't really sure what to do. You can fucking spank yourself in the ass with both hands and give yourself a spark for the day. But yeah, just knowing what you're doing when you walk in and just having a plan of action, no matter how small it is. It doesn't have to be this huge grandiose plan where, you know, I'm going to change my life today, or I'm going to completely turn things around, I'm going to do a 180. It just has to be a small thing, whatever you're doing. Like right now, I'm recording an Auxoro chat. So beforehand, I'm thinking about the things that I want to talk about. I'm coming into it with a discipline and focus that this next 1 hour, 1 hour, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is, whatever length this episode ends up being, that I'm focused on conveying my thoughts from this week and things that stuck out to me, and then translating it into this podcast. And some days I don't feel like doing it. Some days I'm really excited to do it. Most days I'm really excited to do this, but there are some times where I'm doing a podcast with a guest, or I'm recording something by myself, like right now, where I don't really feel the same energy all the time. My energy fluctuates, but my action stays the same. Having that emotional detachment from what you're doing and having a plan, I think really separates the people that have a long-term success. They have that vision. It's not really sexy to talk about. Work ethic and consistency and taking small actions on a day-to-day basis is not super sexy, because there's no instant gratification. Our whole society is built around having this sort of instant success where you start something, and if you're not where you want to be in 6 months, then you just fucking give up. because everyone around you, everyone's always posting the best things that happen to them. And you don't really have context many times of how long someone's been working on something or how long, you know, someone's been failing or what they're actually feeling like on the inside when they're doing it. So you're constantly comparing yourself to this small slice of social media where people are fucking crushing it and they're only posting about the times that they crush it. So if you start a podcast, for instance, and, you know, you have 30 listeners the first podcast, and after 6 months, it's around 100 listeners. And then you see people constantly posting about, oh, I have, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 listeners an episode. And you decide to give up because you're not there yet. You don't know that that person started out in a similar position as you. You don't know that that person went through years and years of having maybe dozens to a few hundred people listen to each episode before they got a lucky break. And when I say lucky, I don't mean that they just got this lightning bolt of vision and all of a sudden they found themselves with thousands of listeners per episode. I mean more of putting yourself in a position to take advantage of situations that are beneficial for you. So if you're constantly putting in the work and you have really great content and someone gives you an opportunity, or maybe a really famous person retweets your podcast or just something that puts more light onto you, you have the catalog of great work that people can dig through and go through and really latch onto. You're not just relying on getting lucky, or you're really putting in the work with a long-term vision. You're priding yourself on the work and on the action that you're taking. So yeah, that's what that quote made me think about when Robert Downey talks about taking action when he walks onto set and knowing exactly what your action is. Regardless of how you feel, I'm going to do this. I know I don't feel like doing it, but I'm just going to fucking do it. There are a few other quotes that kind of made my mind run a little bit. I'm just going to go through. I wrote down some quotes from the podcast, so I'm going through them right now. And also, I'll link a blog post to the podcast notes. Yeah, here's another quote by Robert Downey. He says, quote, "Part of the reason I'm still interested in life and getting to do what I do is I'm a fan. I love movies. I love creativity. I love music. I love culture. And the fact that I actually have a place in it while I'm observing it and digging it, it's an honor." And you can tell that he is legitimately a fan of what he does. He doesn't see himself as different from the culture. I think a lot of celebrities, like they spoke about in the podcast, kind of hold themselves above the culture, to where, you know, Robert Downey Jr. doesn't think that he's bigger than Iron Man. He doesn't think that he's bigger than Marvel. He sees himself as a part of the culture, and he is genuinely a fan of that whole environment. As he says, he loves going onto set. He loves creating. He loves doing these things. I'm sure he looks up to other people and tries to latch on to those inspirations to hone his craft. And I'm sure he's constantly taking notes and doing critical self-evaluations, because he doesn't seem like he gets caught up in being this superstar figure, even though he is. It's kind of like a mystery. Like some people, you think they are a superstar because they want to be a superstar. I get the feeling from Robert Downey Jr. that, you know, he wanted to be a successful actor, but he never really pictured himself as being in the position that he is right now. And that really shows when he's talking about his work. Some things you just can't fake. It's hard to fake for an hour and a half, 2 hours on Joe Rogan a passion and an inspiration and a purpose behind what you're saying. It's not easy to do, unless, you know, he's the best actor ever to live, which I think he's a great actor, but I think even the best actor can't really fake that for an hour and a half conversation. It's at a certain point, your true colors are going to come out. And it's clear to me that he is a practicer, a constant practicer of his work. He's a true fan of what he does. He allows himself to kind of tap into that. I'm not too cool to be a fan. And I totally get that. You know, Robert Downey Jr. is light years in front of kind of the reach that I have with my podcast, even though I would love to have millions and millions of people listen to every single episode. I'm fans of people that are more successful than me. I'm fans of great podcasters. I'm fans of good questions. I'm fans of good episodes. I'm walking down the street on my way to work and I'm listening to podcasts. I'm digging through podcasts. And if you're watching me, you probably think I'm crazy because I'm stopping, you know, every 2 to 3 minutes to write down a question or take a note on some question that Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan or Dave Rubin asks. I love critically going through what great podcasters do, what great people do in the industry that I'm in, and trying to break that down and deconstruct it and latch on to certain things for myself. I don't want to necessarily recreate the Joe Rogan podcast, but I want to take what he does really well and then try to make it my own. So, and I get that feeling from Robert Downey Jr. because, you know, you wouldn't be as successful as he is if you didn't have that mentality. But yeah, if you have not checked out this episode with Joe Rogan and Robert Downey Jr., I do highly recommend it. And it's not a long Joe Rogan episode at all. It's about an hour, which for him is like 5 minutes. He's, as I said before, he's gone on with guests for, you know, 4 or 5 hours. So definitely take a listen to this, sit down, go over the episode, and yeah, just go through it. And like I said, I'll link the blog post with some of my favorite quotes from this episode. I know I went through two, but I think I wrote down about 12 or 13 quotes. I'll put this in the show notes as well, so you guys can take a look if you'd like. Okay. So what else happened last week? I'll pretend to think as I sip this coffee, even though it's written right in front of me. All right. So coffee sip. Second coffee sip complete. I'll probably hit about 5 or 6 throughout this podcast. So yeah, 1917. I don't know if you guys have seen the movie yet, 1917. I saw it last week and I really enjoyed it. And it was a different type of war movie for me, at least. I'm used to seeing war movies with constant action, constant killing, multiple storylines. I think the last war movie that I saw was with Dunkirk, where you kind of had these multiple storylines going back and forth. A lot of action. This was not any better or worse, I think, than Dunkirk, but it was just different because it follows the journey of two boys, young men, and they're going to try to alert the army, the commander of one of the British, I don't know if it's squadrons or command posts, but basically these two young men are going to alert a higher commander, someone who's above them in the army, that's played by Benedict Cumberbatch, and they're part of the British Army, that they are walking into a German trap. They are walking into a trap and they should not attack on the front lines. And so it follows the journey of these two men all the way up to the moment where they need to say, hey, you're going to get 1,000, 12,000, 16,000 British soldiers killed because you think you have the Germans on their heels and they've been planning this the entire time. So I don't want to, I'm not going to spoil anything that happens. I encourage you guys to go watch it. But that's basically the premise of the movie. One thing, I guess the first thing that really stood out to me about the movie was how young the actors were, which I really liked. A lot of war movies, they have the infantry, the guys on the front lines are in their 30s, 40s. They're men. They're already older men. But in reality, the guys on the front lines, they were anywhere from late teens, 18 to early 20s. And so the actors in this movie, I don't know how young they are in real life, but they looked like they were teenagers, which I thought was great because it's easy to forget that there was a time once where people grew up in the early 1900s. They fought World War One when they were teenagers, and then they lived through World War Two and possibly fought again. So, or they were still involved in the armed forces in some way if they were higher up commander. But it's easy to forget that we live in a time, especially in the United States, where there are people in the Army, the Marines, the Navy, the armed forces in general that are fighting evil overseas on the other side of the world so that it doesn't come here. And a lot of these people are teenagers. A lot of these people are in their 20s. And I'm 26, and these guys were definitely younger than me in the movie. If I was born in a different time, I could have easily been both of these men. So it was kind of a smack in the face reminder, like wars aren't fought by 30 and 40 year olds on the front lines. A lot of those guys are, you know, 18, 20 years old. They're kids basically. And if they survive, then hopefully they turn into men. But it kind of put it gave me an enlightened perspective on how lucky we are. Like I was saying, that the draft is not a reality, at least right now, that people have to go through. There were generations where if you saw someone who was just as old as you, you would know that they probably fought in the same war. Even if you didn't really fight with them or you didn't see them, you knew that they went through what you were going through. And now there's not really that connection because there's no draft that's still going on. And it kind of made me think about today, if there was a draft, what would people do? Because, you know, millennials, I'm a millennial, kind of have this reputation where we're pussies, basically. I don't think that's true. I think that the majority of millennials are holding themselves accountable. I don't think that they're pussies. I think that they work really hard. I think that it's just a different time. But I think there is a very small and loud segment of society, mostly on Twitter. Twitter is a fucking weird place to be. It is not representative of the general population, where people say things that make millennials seem softer than they are. And just because they are famous or they get millions of retweets, people assume that they somehow speak for millennials, which isn't true. I do think that if we had a draft today, we would be in a pretty good position to get a lot of people who would say, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to fight for my country. We're going through a time where, you know, I want to protect my rights. I want to make sure this country is safe for myself and future generations. I'm going to stop what I'm doing and I'm going to answer the call that has been given to me by this draft. I also think that there's a part of society that I guess we'll call this the Twitter mob, where if there was a draft, people would start a hashtag like #NotMyWar, or something like that, or just like start something where, you know, kind of like when Trump was elected, where people are saying #NotMyPresident, which is just completely disconnected from reality. You would have something. I think if there's a draft today, you would have those, you know, the people with the most reach on Twitter that are kind of have these radical views, that get a lot of retweets, that people kind of assume that they speak for the general population. I think that there would be a lot of pushback from that end, you know, the hashtag not my war or fuck this draft or whatever. But I think for the most part, millennials, people that would be drafted to fight and, you know, anywhere from 18 to 25 to 30 years old, I think for the most part, people would accept that responsibility and accept it proudly and want to go protect our country. And yeah, I just have, I have so much respect for the people that are fighting overseas, the veterans that have fought wars for this country that are protecting my freedoms. The reason why I can do a podcast and say what I want to say and not get fucking killed for that or have someone come after me or have views that are different than the leader of our country, the leaders of our country, is that we have had people that have fought for the right to free speech and our human rights, our constitutional rights. And that continues today. It's not a done thing where you fight for them once and it's over. It has a life of its own. It's a continual fight to maintain those rights. And I have such respect for the people that are overseas that are sacrificing their family life, seeing their loved ones, doing something like starting a podcast. Even though there are a lot of veterans like Jocko Willink and Tim Kennedy that do podcasts, but the reason why I'm able to stand right here and talk and look out the window and say what I want to say and do a podcast is because of the men and women that are making sacrifices overseas. So I am forever grateful for them for that. I think it's time for another coffee sip. Another patriotic coffee sip. Okay. So what else happened this week? I had a really great podcast with a guy named Traver Boehm. And Boehm is spelled B-O-E-H-M. I'll link all this stuff in the podcast notes so you guys can check him out if you like. And during the podcast, we spoke about a quote that came up from an interaction between Dave Chappelle and Kanye West. So first I'll go into the interaction and then I'll to kind of give the quote context. So Dave Chappelle, I think he was on Jimmy Fallon. He was showing Kanye West unreleased clips of the Chappelle show when the Chappelle show was still on air. This is probably 2004, 2005. And Kanye's in the room watching these unreleased clips of the Chappelle show. And someone calls Kanye. And Kanye says, you know, hey, I can't do this right now. I'm watching unreleased sketches of the Chappelle show. And then a little more time goes by. And then Kanye says, quote, because my life is dope and I do dope shit. And he hangs up. And Dave Chappelle tells this to Jimmy Fallon on the podcast and he cracks up. It's kind of like this great moment of Kanye and like two superstars, Dave Chappelle and Kanye. And Dave Chappelle is obviously blown away by what Kanye says. And yeah, one more time. It's my life is dope and I do dope shit. And I spoke about this quote with Traver Boehm, who is the founder of Man Uncivilized. And Man Uncivilized is a platform he created that redefines how men view and express their masculinity by reconnecting them to their primal and divine masculine. That is his mission. And so my life is dope and I do dope shit. I came across this on his Instagram while I was doing research for the interview. And he said he had posted this because he was going through a divorce with his now ex-wife about 5 years ago. And soon after he started this business and he began to realign how he thought about his life. And one of the things that he began to realign was that I do dope shit. I do cool shit, to kind of tell yourself that I'm living a life of adventure. I'm going to do dope shit. I'm not going to worry about attracting people to me. I don't give a fuck what people think about me. I'm going to just act and think and do the things that excite me and that breathe life into me. And then as a byproduct of that, the people that I want to spend time with will want to spend time with me. I'm not going to waste my time worrying about what other people think. I'm not going to waste my time, you know, sitting inside all day and doing shit that's boring. If someone else was to look at my life, would they think this dude lives a dope fucking life? And after the divorce, he was kind of questioning himself, like, am I doing cool shit? And I think that the reason that he does so much cool shit now, he started the business 5 years ago, Man Uncivilized, that I mentioned. He's able to work for wherever he wants across the planet. When I spoke to him, he was in Costa Rica, and it was before he was going out to surf the waves in Costa Rica. And he can take consulting calls, he writes, he does podcasts from wherever the fuck he wants on the planet, which is something that I'm working towards, which is why I wanted to talk to this guy. But it really made me think about doing cool shit and scheduling cool shit into your life, and the rest will figure itself out. I even wrote on my whiteboard, I have a small whiteboard that's about 12 by 18 inches, and I just bought a bigger one that's about 2 by 3 feet because I was running out of space. But on my smaller whiteboard, I wrote do awesome things, and I put a rectangle box around it because I just want to remind myself every morning when I look at it, like, what am I doing that's cool? What am I doing that's awesome? I want to do awesome shit, and the rest will figure itself out. And I thought about this too in dating, and the connection to dating. I'm a single guy. I'm 26 years old. I'm living in New York City. The connection to dating is that a lot of times people are insecure about planning out dates fully and then asking, in my case, the woman, or not really asking the woman, but also just saying, hey, here's what I planned. I don't care whether you like this or not, I don't care whether you like this or not, but like this is what I want to do, and I'm putting it out there, and let's do this. If you don't want to do this, you can let me know, but this is what I'm planning. I think a lot of guys especially have insecurities about planning out a whole date and just saying, here we go, like taking care of the planning, saying, I want to do awesome shit, and putting it out there and just saying, all right, here we go, let's do this. And that's definitely an insecurity that I'm working through right now. If you've listened to the podcast for a while, you know that I'm a fan of the dating app Hinge. I think it's a great opportunity to meet new women, especially in New York City, where there's so many beautiful women on this app, and kind of taking control and saying, hey, this is what I think is a cool, adventurous first date. It's not just grabbing drinks at a bar. Maybe it's going rock climbing or something with a woman later today, or going ice skating, or learning how to make hats, or for example, I'm going to a blindfolded listening session, but a listening session to Bon Iver, where we're sitting in pitch black, and it's this event in New York City where we're just sitting there in darkness listening to music, and there's going to be a girl with me that I am seeing casually, and that's what I want to do. Like, I think that would be really fucking cool. It's something that we've both never done before. I was lucky enough to get invited to this through podcasting, and like just kind of taking control of what the fuck do you want to do when you go on dates. Just say, I want to do this. I plan this. I plan that, and allow the other person to give you feedback, but don't be afraid of putting yourself out there. My life is dope, and I do dope shit. We also talked about on the podcast with Traver. He's very big on the concept of, if there were no women on the planet, would you do what you are doing right now? And that also stood out to me, because so much of my energy in the past has been focused on how am I going to fuck more girls, or how am I going to fuck more girls, just, you know, have better sex, like basically trying to attract girls into my life and doing things that I normally wouldn't do because I want this girl to have sex with me. I want to seem attractive to her, and not really being secure in my own interests and having the through line thoughts of, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do, And if you're not on board with that, then that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, it's not going to work out. And I think thinking about that, if there were no women on this planet, what would you do what you're doing right now? Or are you just doing this because you want, you're trying to ingratiate some girl to have sex with you, and kind of like you're too afraid to do what you actually want to do or say what you actually want to say. And you're manipulating your speech and you're not saying your true thoughts. You're not telling the truth. You're not being your true self because you want some girl to like you. And I think that has a lot to do, again, my life is dope and I do dope shit. Another quote that kind of goes along this line, I was talking to my friend Dave Robinson, who runs the organization Get Strap Nation, GS Nation, and also Get Strap Stay Strap, which it runs a lot through fitness, through mindset work, through speech, through speech patterns, and creating a plan for yourself and doing what you want to do. And Dave reminds me a lot of Traver. And he told me on a phone call the other day that he reminds himself, I live a love and adventure filled life of significance. And I think that's a very poetic version of my life is dope and I do dope shit. So whatever works for you, if you want to live a love and adventure filled life of significance, or if you want to live a dope life and do dope shit, I think both are one and the same. They're just different ways to verbalize the same sentiment. And I challenge you to think about, not only think about, but schedule things into your life that are fucking cool, regardless of who's going to go with you, what people are going to think about you. What do you genuinely want to do? What makes you feel alive? What makes you full of life? And just schedule that shit into your life and fucking do it. Don't worry about what other people think. Coffee sip numero tres. All right, let's see here. This is something that's more just it's a tip. It's a tip for sleep and a tip for waking up in the morning. So if anyone has ever used alarm clocks, which, you know, I'm pretty sure everyone listening to this podcast has tried a fucking alarm clock or has listened to an alarm clock. It's really fucking hard to get out of bed in the morning on a lot of days. Some days you hear your alarm clock and you jump out of bed. You feel very rested. You feel like you're just ready to go. And then other days you feel like you slept for 5 minutes and you feel like dog shit and you just want to, you go back to sleep. So you press the snooze button, you go back to sleep, you waste 20, 25 minutes. You know, I've even wasted as much as an hour pressing the snooze button. And I think a lot of it has to do with the lighting in the room. And I'll explain what I mean. I just got Philips Hue lights, and these lights are adjustable. You can dim them with an app on your phone or make them brighter. You can change colors. One of the things that you can do is set a morning and a night routine. So a morning routine is when the lights gradually brighten and come to 100% brightness when your alarm clock goes off. So for example, I set my alarm to 6 a.m. I put my morning routine Hue lights at 6 a.m. But at 5:50, my lights turn on really dimly and then they gradually brighten until 6 a.m. when my alarm goes off and I wake up in a really bright room. And I don't have to leave my lights on to do that. They just start going on at 5:50 in the morning, and you can set this to whatever time you want. And I have never felt more like hopping out of bed and getting after it in the morning and just fucking crushing it than when I've had these Hue lights. No matter, you know, maybe I get, you know, 5 or 6 hours sleep a night. Maybe I get 8 or 9 hours sleep one night. But one thing that has been a common through line is that when I wake up in a bright room, I don't want to press the snooze button. Like, I just want to get up and fucking go. So now I set the alarm on my phone. I set it in the Philips Hue Light app. And so when I wake up, my room is just brightly lit. I feel like I'm ready to go, even though it's still kind of dark outside. And a lot of times the light kind of wakes me up before the alarm goes off, which is nice because I wake up at, you know, if I wake up at 5:57 or 5:58, I can just go shut off my alarm because the alarm noise on the iPhone at least is fucking annoying as shit. I have nightmares about the alarm on the iPhone. So if I don't need to hear it, I don't want to have to fucking hear it. So I would say 2 or 3 nights a week, I just wake up automatically because of the cue of the lights getting brighter. I wake up in a bright room and I feel ready to go. So I will link this in the podcast notes as well, but the Philips Hue lights, I think, are a game changer, absolute game changer. I have 3 light bulbs in my room. You can buy them in single. You can buy them in packs of 4. I use them at night too. You can put the lights on different colors. So maybe I'll have them on blue or red or orange or something that's not as bright when I'm trying to fall asleep. And then in the morning I set them to bright white, like bright fucking white, where I wake up and I'm like you don't even want to close your eyes. Your eyes are just open as soon as you fucking see the light. So if you have not, if you're having trouble waking up, I think that the Philips Hue lights are the way to go. And some other things that I do for waking up are plugging my phone away from my bed. So I have to get up and turn my alarm off to get on my fucking bed, or else it's just going to keep going off and off. The lights are another one. And then what else do I do in the morning? Yeah, I guess that's it. Oh, and I get rid of the snooze button on my alarm on the iPhone. You have an option to take off the snooze. So I just take that off because, you know, why the fuck would you want to have the option to snooze if that's not your goal? So I take the snooze button off my iPhone. I plug it in far away from me, so I have to get up and actually turn the alarm off. And then I set up the morning routine on my Hue lights to where it turns on gradually 10 minutes. You can do 10 minutes before, 20 minutes before, 30 minutes before you wake up. You can set it to however long you want, and the lights will gradually get brighter and brighter and brighter until, bam, your alarm goes off and you're just ready to fucking go. Wow. I wasn't going to talk about this, but I kind of feel fired up right now. So I'm going to talk about, after my 4th coffee sip, there's a book that I'm reading right now called The Problem with Everything by Megan Daum, Daum. It's The Problem with Everything, My Journey Through the New Culture Wars. And Megan Daum is, I think she's in her 40s. She's not a millennial, but a lot of this book goes through the mindset of millennials versus the older generation and how the older generation views toughness as the most important characteristic and how millennials view fairness as the most important characteristic. And the kind of the whole safe space culture and the Me Too movement and a lot of these issues that are pervading America right now and how my generation, the millennials and younger, is handling it. And a lot of the shit that goes on in college campuses that is spreading out into real life. So it's like the shift in mindset and culture between the older and the younger generation. And I'm definitely going to do more podcasts on this book because I love this book. There are things that I agree with. There are things that I don't agree with. I was underlining things on every other page. I was writing in the lines of the book constantly because there were so many great ideas. One of the things towards the end of the book, I just finished it yesterday, I think. So this is kind of fresh on my mind. She points out a study conducted by 2 political science scholars with help from polling firm YouGov. And they asked self-identified Democrats and Republicans how they perceive the demographic makeup of the other party. And I'm quoting from the book now. The results were astonishing. Republicans believe that 36% of Democrats were agnostic or atheist, 38% were lesbian or gay or bisexual, and 44% were union members. The actual figures are 9%, 6%, and 11%, respectively. In turn, the Democrats believed that 44% of Republicans were 65 or older, 44% were evangelical, and 44% had annual incomes higher than $250,000. The actual figures are 21%, 34%, and 2%. And she also goes on to say, you might say these numbers are reflective of people's ignorance or curiosity about the political process and the world around them, but what was most striking about this research is that the more respondents said they closely followed the news, the more misinformed they were about the other side. And this gets into something that has been on my mind, that labeling things like the Democrat versus Republicans, we label by human nature. But I think when we identify with a label, like in politics, people are not good at perceiving the characteristics of the other side. You get so caught up in what you believe in and what you think. And how could anyone think differently than me? How can anyone have a different opinion than me? If you do, you're a fucking piece of shit. There's no nuance, as Megan talks in the book. There's no middle. There's no nuance. There's no room for confusion. It's so black and white, where our side does this and your side does that. And if I'm on this side, you're a piece of shit. And if I'm on the other side's a piece of shit. And this study goes to show that we are very bad at perceiving the other side of the equation and how people act and what they do and the characteristics that it goes into. What's the sexuality? What's how much money do they make? How old is the other side? We have these mainstream media ideas of what a Democrat is or what a Republican is in our head, and we constantly have that spoon-fed back to us. If you're watching CNN or Fox News every day, you know that you're just getting this kind of caricature of what it means to be a Democrat or Republican, to have liberal or conservative ideologies. You're not getting the nuance and what it means to actually be a human being. If you're someone who's 100% Republican or 100% Democrat, you aren't thinking for yourself. There's no way you're thinking for yourself if you agree 100% with any side of the equation. People are nuanced. People are confused. People are human. They have cognitive dissonances that are not entirely encapsulated by one ideology. You're allowed to have certain ideology. You're allowed to have nuances in your ideologies, and you should. There's a gradient. You don't have to agree. Like, for example, with abortion, I don't get when people say I'm for abortion or I'm against abortion. There's like so many different levels of that argument. Like, what do you consider the definition of human life? Where does that start for you? What month do you consider abortion off limits? Are you for abortion all the way up until the baby leaves the birth canal? Are you for abortion up to the first trimester, second trimester? There's so much nuance in that argument. It's simply picking a side does it no justice. And I think the labeling is what gets us into a lot of trouble, because we start to think for our labels instead of thinking for ourselves and then worrying about and letting other people label us. Like, I don't care how I'm labeled. I just want to think for myself and evaluate ideas on their own two feet. Can they stand on their own two feet? Is there a problem with them? Do I need to question my own belief? Should I change my mind? Presenting myself with facts and being open to having my mind changed, even if they are outside of my quote unquote label. So if you have not checked out the book, The Problem with Everything, I highly recommend it. It has never been more relevant. I think this book will continue to be relevant throughout the next years and decades, because it's kind of a snapshot of like all this fucking craziness that's been happening from 2014 until now. And so, yeah, The Problem with Everything by Megan Dom. Go check it out. The last thing I wanted to leave you guys with is a quote by Jean-Luc Picard. And Jean-Luc Picard says, quote, "It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life." Again, it is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That was a slight voice crack. Let's see if I could get the end of it without a voice crack. That is not a weakness. That is life. It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life. By Jean-Luc Picard. I hope you guys enjoyed that Exoro chat and have a beautiful weekend whenever you are listening to this. And I will see you guys next time.